For days, Bloomington neighbors have been looking up. It's hard to see at first, but a close look reveals Mittens, the cat, stuck in a tree about 70 feet up. Enter Brady. Throughout the week, other tree climbers tried but failed to rescue Mittens. But Brady climbed higher and worked harder.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Brady's my hero.
Terrible.
Kitty, 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 kitty.
Terrible.
Kitty, 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 kitty,
terrible.
Well, hello there, Radio Free Brooklyn, and welcome to The World is a Terrible Place, bringing you the very best and the very worst from 12 to 1 on every Monday. I'm Ariel Speedwagon.
I am Cassie Wagler. And we summarize the news for you so you don't have to pay attention the rest of the week at all, right?
Exactly.
You can just live in ignorant bliss.
Duck and cover, as we'll be saying. Duck and cover.
Yes.
And what a week it has been.
It's been a week.
Terrible.
It's been a terrible week. What's the most terrible part of your week or life or day?
So this morning was a terrible morning because I finally, I finally went to the grocery store after having been home since the 1st of September. Mm. And so I finally got up to go. And this morning, this is such benign terribleness, but I opened the cheese I had carefully selected and it was moldy all over. I know, and I went to a grocery store that isn't my usual grocery store, so I'm not going to go back to return this $2 block of cheese because it would take me over an hour to get there on the transit, or maybe 45 minutes. And
the cheese was like you just bought the cheese and it was already
moldy? Like in the package. Mm, and this happens sometimes if you buy, I always buy like the cheapest cheddar cheese to try and just to have to melt into my eggs. And sometimes when it's on sale because it's old.
Because it's gotten full of mold.
I know. That's my
Sorry about that.
It was that kind of morning. Just a terrible morning exemplified by this cheese. What about you? What's the most terrible thing that's happened to you?
Well, this morning something terrible did happen to me, which is that I was biking here and this very cute guy started walking towards the bike lane and I was like started to sort of like smile, but then he like jumped at me as if he was gonna like jump in front of my bike, and I was like, well, I said, fuck you, and correct. I flipped him the bird.
Good work.
But what was terrible is that we could have had such a pleasant little, like, good morning, or, like, a little smile fest.
Oh, my gosh, totally.
He decided to, like, leap at me. And I would just like to say that that's the second person that I've flipped off in a week.
Dang.
So I'm
Are you usually a flipper-offer?
I don't know. I've got this new thing going on where I'm just, like, just throwing it around. So.
Sometimes, I had a really actually kind of amazing conversation last night with a friend of mine who talked about how suddenly she just and unexpectedly boiled over with rage.
Yeah.
After one too many men street harassed her.
Yeah.
And just like, And
it
was a complicated conversation. And I think it was complicated for her in a lot of ways. But I just think about like what it is when all of that sort of rage at the world just, and you're like, suddenly I have to flip you the bird or something.
Right. Yeah.
I just can't take it. And I have to scream at this person. And, you know,
it's totally. Sometimes it can be super cathartic, though, when it's not complicated. Like last week on Friday, there was a guy with blonde hair, like this young white guy, and he was in a convertible behind me, and he would not stop honking at everyone.
Oh,
and
I
was just like, okay, we're done here. And I just threw my finger out the window, and I was like, I said, go fuck yourself, sir. But I said it in a much more aggressive tone.
Yeah. It would be kind of amazing if you just filled the door and you're like, sir, really? I appreciate that.
Yeah, why not?
I know. When I'm riding my bike, I always am just busy being aggro at everyone. But, sometimes you got to flip the bird.
You do.
Sometimes the world just requires it.
I agree. Well, we got a lot more terrible stuff going on.
We do. It's quite a show this week, as every week.
Yes, indeed.
I look forward to the week where we're just like, guys, it was actually pretty cool. So
never going to happen, Ariel.
We're just going to play you, I don't know what, some
happy
pop song.
News.
Exactly.
Yeah, we could do it. We could do a week where we just like only report on like marshmallow developments in marshmallow technology.
The latest in crayon colors.
Yeah. have so many good ones.
I know.
Lemon sherbet.
Robin's egg blue. I still see you in my mind's eye.
Beautiful. That's coming up. We got to do that.
Oh my God. Maybe that'll be the show after the election.
Yeah.
When we're just like
it's over.
My adrenals are still haven't recovered.
Totally. That sounds great.
I know. We'll get there. But we have lots for you. Following up on the pipeline from last week. A little bit of news from space. You know.
Let's go. Let's
all right.
Launch.
On your marks. Get set. Go. All right, well, kicking off the news actually with something a little bit less terrible or something pretty kind of cool. Well, this past Thursday, NASA sent up the awesomely dinosaur destructor sounding OSIRIS-REx spacecraft up into outer space to intercept with an asteroid called Bennu for a research mission. And here's a little bit from NASA on that mission.
The small spacecraft will go into orbit around the floating rock and carefully survey its surface, relaying the data back to Earth.
And so this is basically why you study parametric equations, right? From what I remember, wherein you somehow, or scientists are somehow able, it took them 10 years to do enough math to shoot a rocket ship off Earth, send it on a journey for over a year to have it intercept with an asteroid.
I don't get it.
It's,
I mean, I get it, but I don't get it.
I know, likewise. I get it, sort of, but I don't get it. I just imagine Mr. Westendorf somewhere smirking and saying, look, this does something.
Yeah.
So they're sending this rocket, this spacecraft, that's what you call it if you're into NASA, it's a spacecraft, to allow scientists to understand the makeup, the asteroid's makeup, the size, and the trajectory. There's a threat. This one might be one of the ones that's coming to Earth to get us in Dinosaurus. OSIRIS-REx is off dinosaur battle, something like that. And there's also this thought that asteroids and like this had something to do with the formation of the universe. This is where outer space gets nuts, right? So it's going to tell us something about the Big Bang. So they have lots of sensors and they have all of these things sort of to measure and let's. And then this is where it gets truly batshit. This is Dante Loretta, who is the director of the whole program, explaining what is by far the coolest part.
The primary objective of OSIRIS-REx is to bring back 16 grams of pristine carbon-rich material from the surface of Bennu. We're really interested in the organic chemistry of these asteroids and the roles these kinds of objects may have played in the origin of life.
So what they have on this spacecraft is a robotic arm that is straight up going to reach down to this asteroid, scoop up a little sample of asteroid, and fly it back to Earth. There's the graphic that accompanied this video that I'm playing is straight up a robot arm reaching out, scooping a little, and taking it back with them.
How do they know that the asteroid is scoopable?
Outer space, I don't know, but that's what they're planning on doing. And, you know, I'm sure it's a little bit more complicated than a robot with a spoon, but that's their plan. And somehow they're going to be able to do this and not knock the asteroid. I don't even, this is mind-bending, right? And it's this whole, the scale of this is also just, it's going to take them 2 years to reach this asteroid. It's going to take them a year to fly along beside it, right? Because everything's in motion, and measure everything, and then do its little scoop, and then take another few years to fly back. And then in September 2023, right? That's 2023. That's 7 years from now, right? The sample will land in the Utah desert, where it will somehow not be immediately intercepted by space pirates, right? Imagine selling, imagine what that would go for at auction, and instead be driven back by NASA to their main labs, where they will hopefully strictly quarantine it to keep it from giving us aliens or space bacteria. I know, right? And they will study it in this fashion. And so all of this science is happening. This is taking them 10 years to plan. It's going to take another 7 years for this to go, all for like a couple of grams of asteroid space dust so that we can understand how the universe began. Wow.
I mean, in other news, so many things happened on Friday, including two rulings about the Dakota Access pipeline. If you recall, this pipeline is going through part of the Standing Rock Reservation, and the Standing Rock Tribe is saying, no, we're not, this is not cool. And so they made a request to the federal judge to stop the building of the pipeline, saying that there wasn't enough study of this before it happened. And on Friday, two rulings came back. Number one, the federal judge rejected the request first, so sad times, giving the company, Energy Transfer Partners, the ability to continue construction. And then, and this is like kind of nuts, like how these rulings came so fast, because 20 minutes later, the number that I've heard, another statement comes, and this one is a joint statement from the Department of Justice, Department of the Army, and the Department of the Interior that basically says, we are stopping construction on this part of the pipeline until we have more information about how it will affect the local and government, which is yay news!
It's a win for all Indians. It's the win for indigenous people.
Yes, that is the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Dave Archambault, and he's speaking to the crowd at the Sacred Stone Camp, which is where everyone is camping out to be on site and just, well, people, they're protesting, but they call themselves protectors. They're not protesting, they're protecting. And so this is great, but it is temporary. It is not, it doesn't mean that the construction is over. It just means that the Obama administration is saying, okay, we got to look around a little bit. But this does feel like a really big victory and really exciting for a couple of reasons. The first one being that the Obama administration is actually listening and responding to political pressure. What?
I love this story.
Oh my God.
What like, a great treat in I a mean, president.
So wacky. I mean, I remember I'm from Wisconsin, and during the like uprising in Wisconsin, back years ago, people were occupying the Capitol, and none of the political leaders responded to the protests. And I remember just feeling like, if this doesn't generate a response, like, what are we supposed to do? Like, just live here forever? So in any case, this is a moment in which, like, political pressure is actually, like, creating some kind of change. And then also, in the statement that was released, there was this line. Furthermore, this case has highlighted the need for a serious discussion on whether there should be nationwide reform with respect to considering tribes' views on these types of infrastructure projects.
What?
Interesting. Very interesting,
in
right?
In the official
statement.
What?
The statement is saying, in the future, we're actually going to take the tribes' point of view into consideration when thinking about building things like pipelines that go across the entire nation.
So wow.
I mean, that also sets like a precedent for the future.
It kind of bums me out that I'm so awed and happy that they just literally said we might consider the treaties we signed with these people when we're doing the things we said we talked to them about. But it's still, sadly, that's huge.
Yeah, totally.
If it does something, it's even mentioning it, frankly.
Right. And this has been also kind of an interesting situation this past week because there's been so many different like shows of solidarity around this issue, which has been another. This is such a happy story. It's been, well, not really because the environment is fucked. But anyways, this little tiny slice. For example, Obama was actually not even asked about the pipeline until he was in Laos just this past week. And it was a person, not even an official, you know, member of the Obama press corps, but just someone in the audience who asked him about this. And the trip to Laos was interesting because Laos is actually the most heavily bombed country per capita in history. Did you know that?
Jesus.
Yeah, I know
who
that.
Who even comes up with that number? My God.
Well, all these cluster bombs were dropped during the Vietnam War.
Right.
And they're just covering the country. People are getting limbs blown off like all the time. And the need for prosthetics there is like really huge. And they've actually done like a lot of really good work there around that. But it's, you know, it's ongoing. It's still an issue. There's still bombs. They're going off. And so Obama pledged $90 million in bomb clearance initiatives while he was there. So we've got the United States trying to clean up, like, one mess. And then at the same time that he's there to talk about that, this woman in the audience stands up and asks him this question.
My name is Alice Matthew. I'm from the state of Sabah in Malaysia. My question is in solidarity of with the indigenous people in not my country, but in America itself. I just heard recently that this group of people is fighting to protect their ancestral land against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Yeah, so My question is, what in your capacity, what can you do to ensure the protection of the ancestral land, the supply of clean water, and also environmental justice is upheld?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. As many of you know, the way that Native Americans were treated was tragic. And one of the priorities that I've...
All right, so I'm going to spare you the political sort of non-answering of the question. He just basically says, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. Like, things were bad in the past and we're working on it. But that question is gorgeous. I mean, that question is just, like, so beautifully stated.
That's everything.
That question was so great. You know, what can you do in your capacity, but then also just saying the word solidarity in that instance. And also this week, the Palestinian BDS National Committee released a statement in solidarity. With Standing Rock. So people are holding strong. They're there. They're not going anywhere. So that's good news. One bit of kind of wacky news is that an arrest warrant was issued for Amy Goodman
for
trespassing.
Our friend and compatriot, Amy
yes.
Goodman.
So Amy Goodman was there last week reporting on a private security firm which was bringing out dogs to attack protesters
right, I saw
and
that.
Spraying them with pepper spray. And so then they issued an arrest warrant for her. And she was also arrested at the Republican National Convention in 2008. So she's quite a target. They love to get Amy. But donate money to them. Donate money. Donate money. Donate money. Donate money. You can Google Sacred Stone Camp and donate to the legal defense and donate to the camp. And it's a beautiful thing that's happening. And it's happening right now. And let's support it.
Exactly. We'll put the link up on our website that
yes.
we're working on. Theworldisaterribleplace.com.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. All right. So you remember last week, for those of you who are listening, when we talked about the missile test that North Korea did during the G20 summit. I know there was the G20 was happening in China and North Korea just sort of fired some missiles just because they could. And then Friday, which is the 68th anniversary of North Korea's founding as a communist nation. North Korea, you probably heard, detonated its fifth nuclear test weapon. Yep. It's strongest to date. And North Korea is saying also that it came from a relatively small device, the kind of device you could, say, mount on a ballistic missile that you could fire a couple hundred miles, a.k.a. Oh, shit.
Yeah, ooh,
I know. Yes. North Korea has really been making a point that it's going to go ahead with this, regardless of the sanctions placed, regardless of treaties that people are trying to get it to sign. Everybody is mad about this, especially with this latest firing. The U.S. is mad. South Korea is mad. Japan's mad. Russia's mad. The EU is mad. And even China, which is North Korea's one real international ally, is mad. Mm-hmm. And they're really mad because there's kind of nothing to be done, right? They've been trying economic sanctions, which hasn't really stopped anyone from doing this. As long as there is some money, North Korea seems to have been really invested in becoming a nuclear state. The government doesn't seem to care. There's a lot of reports that come out about how bad it is for the average citizen in North Korea because of the economic sanctions, and they're just like, we want a nuclear weapon,
mm-hmm.
right? And then there's this really amazing history. I don't know amazing, but this history in North Korea where they sign anti-nuclear proliferation treaties, which allows them to get access to nuclear reactors for power. And then they're like, LOL, sorry about your treaty, and and convert the reactors for weaponized nuclear, to create weaponized nuclear material, right? And honestly, there's this part where you're like, that's pretty smart, guys. Like,
yeah,
if this is what you want, like, way to play a system that's against you. And of course, and in fact, North Korea is playing this whole thing as like, we're trying to defend ourselves against all of these countries that hate us.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on.
But you're also sort of this terrifying dictatorship, right? And, you know, it's sort of after that, there's nothing left aside from that thing that, you know, we could do, but we really don't want to do it.
Let's
because
not do that.
It would just sort of make a mess. And did you hear they have nuclear weapons now? And clearly North Korea's leadership is not really invested in statesmanship or, you know, peaceful approaches.
Right.
Right? They're just very, very clearly, you know,
right? Like, they're just like, try us, bitches. Just try us. Please try us for our sake, right? And so the international community is freaking out, just being like, what can we do? What do they really want? We don't know. And basically, the consensus is they want to be a nuclear state and they want nuclear weapons.
They want power.
They want power
on the global stage.
Exactly. They want power on the global stage. And you can't push around a nuclear state in the way, especially a nuclear state with this reputation for kind of being getting angry and throwing and like throwing missiles around.
Right.
Like, you want to be taken seriously? Say, you know, prove you've designed a nuclear warhead that you can launch to a missile that can make it to most of your enemies around the continent, right? South Korea is obviously terrified, as are the U.S. interests in South Korea. It's a long way between North Korea and the continental United States, missile-wise, but it's not impossible. And it's kind of working. People are just, like, there's a paralysis. What do you do when an independent state says, like, fuck y'all, we don't care about your rules, right?
Right. Well, there's also this interesting thing where, you know, the United States, as the only country that's ever dropped a nuclear bomb, is in a, you know, an interesting position where it's, like, the only thing you can do now is, like, move forward politically in which the United States doesn't, like, further that type of defense policies, you know?
Yeah.
And but it's also just like they, I mean, do they not have a right to also be a nuclear state? Like, if there's so many nuclear states out there?
I mean, it's a real question. I think it's especially hard because the U.S. is like, yeah, we're totally against anti-proliferation. We're just hanging on to these 10, really, just in case. You know what I mean? We're not literally 10 nuclear weapons, but it's sort of like that. And similarly, Russia, everyone's sort of like, yeah, nuclear proliferation is terrible, which means we're not going to let other people have nuclear weapons.
Right, exactly.
Right? And on the one hand, I can't even speak to North Korea, or like, I don't want to give it like, oh, well, you know, is this like democratically elected state where the people are really in control of their destiny? How can we control them? But on the other hand, there's not much to be done. And as of Monday morning, Pyongyang time, which is the capital of North Korea, the North Korean officials have indicated they're about ready to run more tests.
Hmm.
And yeah, and no one knows exactly what to do if they work. You know, no one knows that. No one knows exactly what will happen. You know, is this going to, North Korea has been militarizing and sort of amping up its aggression over the past couple of years. Will they use a nuclear weapon? Will they actually want to negotiate in any way? If they want to negotiate, how flexible are they really going to be? And because of that, we are unfortunately going to have to say that sounds like the test was an enormous success for North Korea. And those are the headlines, folks.
We're going to hear a little song that's a vintage classic hit. Take a little break. When we come back with the election, do you want to set up this?
This is some classic 1951 educational films for children, and it's really, you know, I was having a conversation the other night about what, you know, what would we do if this nuclear weapon, if North Korea finally gets a long range enough ballistic missile to just send some over, and you know, the U.S. was facing this problem, and here's what they said to do.
Dum dum, deedle dum dum, deedle dum dum, deedle dum dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He'd duck and cover, duck and cover.
He did what we all must learn to do.
You
and you
and you
and you.
Duck and cover.
Be sure and remember what Bert the Turtle just did, friends, because every one of us must remember to do the same thing. That's what this film is all about. Duck and cover.
Isn't that just beautiful? Telling the children that if there's a nuclear warhead coming at them, they should just get under their desks and duck and cover. Classic. Next up, we have electoral politics, starting with the 2016 presidential election. What a week for for Hillary Clinton. This is probably the first time I have ever said that. She came out of fundraising hiding and did a few things. She said something, and then she got pneumonia.
I know.
She has pneumonia. She got sick at a 9/11 thing, and then she had to leave, and she has pneumonia. And I actually woke up this morning when I saw that headline. I was like, October surprise. And I was like, oh, God. Like, I am no Hillary Clinton fan. Like, absolutely not. But I was like, oh, God, don't get pneumonia. Like, come on, stay in the race. Anyways. All right.
That's real.
That's real.
That's real.
But the thing that happened before the news about the pneumonia broke is that on Friday night, Hillary Clinton had the most Democratic Party sounding fundraiser you could ever really imagine. You cannot make this stuff up. It was at a venue on Wall Street in downtown New York City. It was an LGBT fundraiser with Barbara Streisand and Rufus Wainwright performing. Classic Democratic Party.
That's very, 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 very.
I was like, what? Did I read that correct? So here's Barbara Streisand singing a little parody of Donald Trump to the tune of the song Bring in the Clowns. Here, let's listen.
Is he that rich? Maybe he's poor. Till he reveals his returns, who can be sure? Okay, something's amiss. I don't approve. If he were running the free world, where would we move?
Bravo, Barbara Streisand. Leaning over the crowd, left and right. Everyone's laughing and happy and clapping, and she's just got them in the palm of her hand, and Hillary's feeling really safe and good, and she's among friends. And then she says something, and this is what she says.
You know, to just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that.
The basket of deplorables.
Oh, my God. I love how she also is just like Hillary Clinton untucked. Like, she's just like, yep. I don't care. Like, she's on. Yeah. Salty.
And I love how she says it as if that is a phrase. And that's kind of what I want to get into a little bit today. You know, there's a lot of debate about how will this affect the election. But I'm really interested in where does she get this term, basket of deplorables?
Hmm.
So I did a scientific search in which I searched for the word deplorables in Google News from September 1st, the year 2000, to September 1st, 2016. So before this happened. And here's what I found. Are you ready for the results?
I am dying to know.
Okay. So all of the top stories for the word deplorables were in Spanish. And the reference was in reference to conditions, deplorable right. conditions. And in Spanish, if it's plural conditions, it's plural deplorable. There was zero references that I saw to the word deplorables, plural, in English. Interesting.
Well, so, as a noun, too, right? Deplorables, a basket full of deplorables is like a basket of kittens. It's a noun.
No, it's fine. So then I searched for deplorable in the same time period from 2000 to 2016. And what I found, again, was this reference to condition. So here's just like a smattering of the headlines. We've got hundreds of dead, injured animals found at deplorable farm. Michigan high school responds to deplorable video of students. And then this is sort of classic deplorable filth. Dozens of animals rescued from New Hampshire home. So generally, it's like this. There is this like connotation of like shame and dirty, which obviously has a class connotation, and depravity and poverty, which is quite a, you know, not a great move, I would say, for the Clintons, who are very rich.
It's a very Wall Street Democratic fundraiser kind of thing.
It sure is. And then, as you said, there's no noun deplorables. Like, you don't call someone a deplorable, although maybe that will start to happen now. Maybe people will, kids on the playground will be like, I don't want to play with that kid. He's a deplorable. But, you know, in any case,
And then we have the other side of the phrase, which is the basket that the deplorables actually are transported in. And what an interesting basket this is.
What a sort of bummer, but Hillary.
So people are making comparisons to Mitt Romney's famous line, in which he said that 47% of people in the United States are dependent on the government. But I think that there's actually a much more relevant Romney line. Another thing that he said.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Binders full of women. Isn't that just asking to be remixed?
Binders full of women. Binders full of women. And I said, well, gosh, can't we find some women? Binders full of women.
Okay.
And so we took a concerted effort.
Excellent. So Romney says this in a debate with a question about workplace inequality. And Obama answers by talking about the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act of 2009, which he signed into law. And Romney goes off about talking about how he was really just trying to get a woman, any woman at all, in his cabinet, and so he had to go through these binders full of women to find a candidate. So that was another exciting moment for memes on the internet, as the basket full of deplorables also is. Yes,
can I add? I would say that back in when this happened, I did a performance with Drake Campbell where we wrote a song about the binders full of women that remains one of my favorite performances ever. Dre, if you're out there. We were genius, and maybe it's time for Basket of Deplorables.
It's happening. It's already happening on the internet. The memes are out of control. Like,
I can only imagine.
I was like, oh, this. I thought of things, and I was like, oh, isn't that funny? Ha, ha, ha. And then I looked on the internet, and I was like, oh, somebody already made that like an hour. Like, not an hour, like a day ago. But this is kind of an exciting sort of exploration into poetics that's happening, these containers full of the electorate. And so we're going to play just a tiny game here in which we're going to create new containers for other sections of the electorate in hopes that this combination will emerge in the 2016 election. All right. Are you ready for this?
All right. I think we got a couple minutes for a game.
Okay, cool. So the first thing that you're going to do is I would like you to reach into the first container, and you're going to pull out
the one with the paper.
You're going to pull out a segment of the electorate. Next segment of the electorate.
Law-abiding citizens who choose to exercise their Second Amendment rights.
What kind of container?
The teeny tiny pocket in your jeans, just above the actual pocket.
Okay,
that's cozy.
Good. All right.
I don't know. I feel like the rifle would poke you.
Maybe. We got one more.
All right, one more.
And I really hope that the politicians are listening so that they can use these analogies.
Okay, this is a certain subset who don't love America in the way you and I do.
What kind of container do we have for them?
They will go into a plastic storage bin, the kind you put clothes in and put under your bed.
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you're listening, politicians, we have some suggestions.
Exactly.
It's been quite a hit.
Plastic underbed storage bins full of people who don't love America like you and me. Exactly. And teeny tiny fake jeans pockets full of Second Amendment using citizens.
Excellent. And that's the news from the Democratic Party.
Zinger. Short. I, over here on the GOP side, am officially taking a Trump break. I am using my power, whatever power has been vested in me, to take a Trump break because I just can't this week. It's just too hard. And instead, using my powers to tell you all to get out and vote in the New York state primaries. For those of you listening not from New York, sorry. We've had many primaries so far this year, and this is the one that is mostly for state office, state assembly, state senate, that kind of thing. And for those of us in New York City, where the government is run by Democrats and the election is going to a Democrat, these primary elections are actually the ones that matter, where the person who will almost certainly serve short of, I don't know, an asteroid or something like that, the person who will actually serve is chosen. And, you know, all of these terrible things that happen in states around the nation, those happen because of who gets elected locally, right? You want to close the preferential rent loophole in your stabilized lease so that these rent freezes actually happen for you? That requires a state representative. You want the MTA to get more funding so it stops raising fares? that requires a state representative, things like that. The city doesn't control everything, and a lot of the things de Blasio has been trying to do in New York City over the past couple of years have been stopped by not having the power in the state, right? Most of the races on the ballot in the city are for state assembly seats, and these are not all stayed coronations. There are some hot races. There's a three-way race in Brooklyn's 44th district, which is part of Park Slope, part of Kensington, between Robert Carroll, who comes from sort of a ongoing, long-standing Democratic family. He works in his family's law firm. There's Troy Odenall, who is a sort of a community activist against especially rent, and then there's R.M. Curry Smithson, who's sort of another coming out of the Bernie movement guy, sort of also a little bit more progressive. It's sort of the progressive, the more progressive, and the still more progressive, right? But they come from different places, and they are bringing different approaches in terms of fire, that kind of thing. There are other hot tickets throughout the city. There is the election to permanently replace Sheldon Silver. You may remember after he got sent up for corruption, finally, there was a special election, and now this is the election to permanently replace him. And there's also one of the funny quirks of the American judicial system. There are a bunch of judges that are up for election. And electing judges is like one of these funny things that happen a lot in the United States. And it comes out of a desire to have a way for the judiciary to be responsible to the electorate, mm-hmm. and responsive to the electorate. You don't just get embenched and then it's there forever, right? Yes.
And can I just ask, like, what in your opinion, what is like different about that? Like, why is electing judges like different than electing legislators?
Well, what are the top three things that you would say a judge should be doing?
Closing all prisons.
But a judge can't do that. That's the thing. Judges can't do that, right? Like, what actually makes a good judge is, to some extent, is political, right? Like, you see people being like, oh, do you tend to rule this way or do you tend to rule that way? Like, judges certainly have preferences. Do you tend to rule to keep, you know, families together? Or do you tend to rule to, like, have children go out into the foster system? Do you tend to rule for tenants? Do you tend to rule for landlords? How strictly do you apply different rules? But that's a level of scrutiny that's hard to find information on, first of all. And I think also it's a level of, like, a good judge is also someone who is thoughtful and rigorous in the law, right? It's not actually a judge's place to do things like just close all prisons, if you accept that that is, it's also a judge's place to mean that automatically everyone goes to jail, right? Like, that's how you get terrible judges.
Right, no, totally.
Like, that's how you get some of the judges coming out that, like, say things like, well, that kid who was a rapist, you know, the Stanford swimmer, he was a good kid, so we shouldn't actually sentence him, right?
Right.
And, like, that is actually a judge who I believe lost his reelection campaign, right? That's how you run into these kind of things. But I think it's funny, and I think it's also very, very hard to find information about these races that is meaningful, that isn't like, vote for so-and-so because she's a really great person. Much more like, instead of like, vote for so-and-so because her judicial record shows a constant, like, you know, consistent support of the First Amendment right for protesters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is also this thing where money, how does money affect elections and how does money affect the judiciary in particular? I think it is tricky because they have such direct power over people's fates, you know, and although studies show, and I haven't had time to really read enough to trust what the studies are showing, that it isn't necessarily there isn't necessarily huge proof of judicial influence with money, but it's just hard to imagine it's not out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried to come up with information about the judges, especially in Brooklyn, but it was actually very hard. So again, you can go to our website, theworldisaterribleplace.com, if there's information, we'll put some stuff up there. So a couple of races I'm psyched for, right? I'm a South Brooklyn kid, and I'm psyched to get to vote for Rodney Spichot, who represents Flatbush. She's the incumbent, running against Victor Jordan, who she also defeated in the last election. I saw her at a candidates forum in Flatbush, and I think she's great. I think she really gets it. I think she's fiery. She's relatively new into the state assembly, and I'm interested to see sort of what else she brings. Like, if you're new, cool. It's hard to get a lot. Also, if you're in the parts of Crown Heights or Bed-Stuy who get to vote for Diana Richardson, you're basically awesome and you're lucky and you should vote for her. She tore it up at this forum. She was a total fire starter. The most recent bill she sponsored would increase succession rates for tenants in rent-stabilized apartments.
Nice.
Beyond right now, you can only get sort of inherit a lease if it's your parents' lease or your grandparents' lease, and this would open it up to more extended family members, which reflect the reality of a lot of people living in rent-stabilized apartments.
That's great.
In Brooklyn, she's the person I wish I could vote for, even though I'm out of district.
And you can get a fake address.
That would probably not be the right way to do that.
Okay, just kidding.
But she's great. And there are a lot of other candidates out there, too. And you do have to be registered in the Democratic Party to vote for Democratic candidates in that way where technically it's just sort of like you might remember from the presidential primaries
oh,
here,
yes.
Right?
Do I ever.
Do you ever, where if you're not registered as Democrat, you can't vote in the Democratic Party because it's a private organization and you don't have to join them.
I think that's crap.
It's total crap, especially here where, again, like the Democratic primary is essentially where the candidate who wins gets selected.
Yeah.
Right. You can still vote on the working party's line in the main election if you are registered as a Democrat, which is what I do. And I know people don't register out of a sense of protest or a sense of like, damn the system. But, you know, everyone has to, you know, in this radio show, I'm the within the system person more.
Right.
Yeah, and so I'm like, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. So you can figure out where to go vote in the New York City Department of Elections website, which is we also have linked, or you can just look it up. Just Google it. Right. The polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. and your employer is required to give you time off to vote if your hours would stop you from voting normally. So go out. I don't know if I can say go out and do it or go out and make a thought about it or decide what you have to have. But if you get a sticker, and these are actually if you're going to vote somewhere, these are the ones I recommend you vote for because they actually have an enormous amount of clout in terms of what happens here in this great state, whatever state that is.
Beautiful.
So we're up for our next break. And I know Cassie has been selecting a song for us.
Yes, indeed. This is a song that is going to gear us up for a very exciting sports coverage. So this song mentions two of my favorite sports, bicycle riding and roller skating.
Oh, how very... I love that story. Hang on. Let's see if we can get this queued up. Hang on just a moment, everybody.
I would just like to say for the record that I'm not registered with the Democratic Party.
No,
I need to be the counter voice here. If you're with
I think that's great. Counter away.
I just feel like I'm not a Democrat. I don't in any way, of all the groups that I align myself, that is just like, that is not one of them. And it would feel kind of absurd to register with that political party. But you're right. I mean, but then I've gotten really angry. I've been at the poll. I was at the polls once, and I was trying to vote in the primary for mayor, my name wasn't on the list. And this was when I was just learning of this rule, and so I was like, "What's going on?" Blah 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 blah. And this guy followed me outside, and he was like, "Excuse me. Are you a registered Republican?" And I was like, "How dare you, sir?"
It's really hard to be a Republican in this city because it's like the kind of thing the Republican primary is. It's like Staten Island's big, and some parts of Queens are big, but other than that, it's like 7 people vote.
Right. Totally.
You know. Yeah. All right. We've got
all right,
the song.
We got
up.
It. All right.
All right.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight. It almost seems like you're avoiding me. I'm okay alone, but you got something I need. Well, I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. Something for me. Oh, I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key. I ride my bike, I roller skate. Don't drive no car. Don't go too fast, but I go pretty far. For somebody who don't drive, I've been all around the world. Some people say I've done all right for a girl.
Well, hello there. You're listening to The World is a Terrible Place here on Radio Free Brooklyn. We're bringing you the very best and the very worst every Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. And we read the news so that you don't have to.
That's right.
If you like what you're hearing or you just like freeform radio, generally speaking, you can support Radio Free Brooklyn by going to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.com, and clicking donate. You can join the Patreon page and become a monthly supporter where you get fun perks and interesting facts, or you can just make a one-time donation to support all of the things we're doing. There's a new space opening up where you can watch us, you can watch things, there'll be music performances here. There's all of the ongoing electronic expenses that come with running an internet radio station, so you can go ahead and support the show. So that's what we recommend you do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're almost at the end, but we have a couple more things for you. All right, you ready?
Ready.
Sports with C-Wag.
All right, friends. It is still basketball season. The WNBA took a little time off so that their players could go and participate in the Olympics, which they dominated. And I finally made it to a game. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Finally. You've been talking about this all season.
Oh, it took me a long time, but I went on Friday night. It was a dream come true. It was the New York Liberty versus the Connecticut Sun. The Liberty won 89-82.
Dang, that's close.
It was actually a really close game. They just kind of sat like that together the whole time. And the Liberty was pretty much always in the lead, but the Sun was like right there. Beam, boom, 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 boom. And Tina Charles, my favorite player, she rocked it. 23 points, 10 rebounds.
Dang.
She also wears one of those like face masks so she doesn't get whacked in the face, which makes her look kind of like a, I don't know. It looks a little scary.
That's amazing. I love it when they you're just like, oh my God,
it's like, wow, you're really prioritizing
like Jason from Friday the 13th is coming to dominate this basketball court.
What? That's fine. I mean, I appreciate your nose. But this time that I was there, there was someone else on the court who I just could not really keep my eyes off, and was very, very impressive and awesome. And that was the one of the referees, who was a woman. Her name is Tiffany Bird, and she had this like extremely long blonde hair that she had in this like low ponytail. Ugh. And she was just excellent. She was, yes. I mean, obviously she's a professional referee, but her like gestures were amazing, and I've been trying to replicate them, but talking about her the last few days and being like, yeah, and then she did this and she did this, but I'm not a referee. And so I was just like really impressed with like how much authority she exuded in her like just gestures with her arms. Like, right. I was really like in awe, and I actually didn't really watch the second half very much because I took like so many pictures of Tiffany Bird. But it got me just kind of like interested in the role of women referees in the WNBA and the NBA. And Tiffany Bird, who, you know, mostly works in the WNBA and then also at college level, it was kind of interesting. It was kind of sad when I read about it because she was like, well, my goal obviously is to make it to the NBA. That's like the top of my profession. And I was like, oh, come on. This is just, don't you want to just make it to the WNBA? It's even better. But I got interested in one person who was the first woman and the longest running female referee in the NBA, whose name is Violet Palmer. And we're going to play just like a little clip from this very good looking documentary about her. She started in 1997 and she's still serving as a referee in the NBA. I would also like to say that she recently married her long-term partner girlfriend.
Oh.
And she wore a gold suit.
Yes, we love her.
We love her. So here she is talking about when she first came on in 1997.
And some NBA history tonight. Violet Palmer.
And Violet Palmer becoming the first woman to referee an NBA regular season game.
In 1997, Violet and Dee Kantner were signed by the NBA to become the first top-level female referees in any major professional sport.
I was scared out of my wits. I knew that the entire world had all eyes on me, and they just knew that I was gonna fall on my face and fail.
1997, you know, all we knew as referees at that particular time that two women were coming in.
Most of us
kind of thought that if there's a woman out there that can actually do this job, there's probably a man also out there that's just as good.
Yeah, so then they get into like some of the sexism and the the players' sort of resistance to having a female referee, which is so interesting. It was like 1997; that was like so recently. But
I love this idea that, well, if there's a woman who could do it, a man could also do right, it, guys.
Totally, totally. But she's pretty rad, and I recommend watching this. It's called Queen V, and it's all about her. She's awesome. So that is Sports with C-Wag today. As you can tell, I don't really have that much to say about actual sports, just about the lesbians who participate in them.
I think this is a safe space for that kind of sports coverage.
Thank you.
It's totally.
Thank you. All right. And over to you. Tell us what to wear now that it's chilly.
Rain, snow, sun, ice, weather, fashion, outdoor.
Now, I don't know about you, but I'm getting a little sick of all this spandex in my life. All of these tiny shorts are wearing out at the thigh. All of my cutout shirts are just getting a little old. That mesh is starting to, you know, smell like summer a little bit. But you should know, mercy and a change of pace are at hand. Folks, today it's only a high of 78 and a low of 63, and well, it's going to go back up to 89 on Wednesday. After that, we're in a long, slow slide through the 70s. It's high of 78, low of 61 on Thursday. High of 77, low of 66 on Friday. High of 79, low of 72 on Saturday. And so it continues. What does this mean for you? It's time to bring out a sleeve, or not and, a pant. You're going to need, especially in the evening, just a little bit more layers, and that means we're time for what's my personal favorite time of year, the strategic mismatch. Drapey sweater and a short short? Yes. Crop top with some jeans? Yes. It's even possible that a boot here and there might be worthwhile once again, because no longer are bodies solely suffering sweat machines. Whether this will turn into the beginning of fall in earnest or whether it's just a momentary fashion reprieve, it's too soon to tell. But for now, if you have that knit shawl, if you have that perfect little scarf, not a heavy scarf, just a light scarf, it's finally your time. A fashion change is at hand.
Yeah, remix it. What are you most looking forward to bring out in your fall wardrobe, Arielle? Do you have a piece that you've just been looking at all summer?
You know, I'm actually in a moment. This is how my life is, a cyclical pant buying hellhole, wherein I buy a bunch of pants and I wear them for a couple of years and then they all wear out at once. And then it's hard for me to find pants, which is why I buy in bulk. And so then
you run around in your skivvies for a few weeks until you go pants shopping again.
Exactly. And going pants shopping for me means looking desperately on the internet for anyone who makes like a tightish skinny leg pant in my size, which is not the most fun I've ever had. And it costs a lot of money because for the internet, you don't get to try it on until you've bought it. And then you have to send it back. And they don't always refund shipping. And so it's kind of a pain in the ass. So I am currently in a moment of like, all my shorts are worn out. All my, you know, it's going to have to be pulled out by sweaters for a little minute. It's just going to have to be a sweater until I finally find the pant.
Gotcha.
There's the holy grail of the Uniqlo skinny leg stretchy man pant that comes sometimes all the way up to a 48, and I usually need a 46, but it's only sometimes, and I think they just make 100. They sell out immediately, and then they don't make them again right away, which I hate.
That's so rude of them.
It's so rude.
They're so mean.
I know, so I'm going to need just sweaters and scarves and
just
shorts
keep your top half
and boots.
Warm.
Exactly.
And just let your bottom half just tough it out.
I don't know. What about you?
Well, I have an item that I bought that is a like checkered kind of top. It's like a top blouse. It's very like Dolly Parton, early Dolly Parton, and it's so cute, and I haven't been able to wear it yet because it's been so hot, which actually I love, and so I'm going to wear that tomorrow.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I cannot wait.
That's so exciting. I need to find a couple pieces I'm excited about.
Just one, to get you going.
Exactly.
Yeah,
really. If really that's I'm never really happy about this part of the year because I have to wear more clothing, and it's the more clothing I have to wear, the more clothing I have to find, and blah, 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 masculinity, blah, 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 class, blah, 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 fashion, blah, 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 fatness, you know.
So we're going to close out our show with a little bit of our friend David Bowie, Ground Control to Major Tom, just an homage to the scientists out there taking their ice cream scooper paws and reaching out into asteroids. And I just wanted to say that I have very mixed feelings about this, and I once cried at a planetarium because I felt so overwhelmed by the world and the universe that I was like felt really insignificant and small. So I think this can be actually a very emotional topic for people. Don't you agree?
I do. It's so immense. It's part of one of the most amazing YouTube videos, and maybe if we is in fact one of the astronauts aboard the space station covering the song we're about to play with the guitar.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And he doesn't cover the, you know, the plot twist, but I can't imagine actually being in space.
Let's listen.
Let's just listen for a moment.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom.
This has been The World is a Terrible Place here on Radio Free Brooklyn, bringing you the very best and the very worst from 12 to 1 every Monday. I'm Arielle Speedwagon.
I am Cassie Wagler.
And up next is Amy Goodman with Democracy Now!,
copying all of our stories as she does every week.
Only with a staff.
And money.
Well, someday. Here's to you, Amy.